Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's doing his 6th podcast in 4 days. How is that even possible? It's not. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Hello, my fine friends. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was talking to the cast of American Pie, The Book of Love, which we all remember. You remember? Bug Hall's in it, isn't he? Brandon Hardestry, he plays Marshall Lubetsky. We've all seen it. Even Stifler didn't do this one, but Dustin Diamond did. He makes a cameo in it. Not seen it? They call it rehearsed. But anyway, those guys, I have seen it. I've seen all the American Pie films. And there's a big book that's hidden in the library that's all the generations of school kids who've been to that school, their advice on having sex. It's great. anyway, yeah, I've done. You might say it's not possible, but I've done in the last 4 days. I've done 4 days. I've done 6 podcasts. You might say, come, Rich, you only do one a night, so that isn't possible. But it is, as long as you cross the international date line between each podcast, you can make it work. Don't go in the wrong direction, though, or you'll be in trouble. Rahelastapat is making it into the mainstream. A lot of you have sent me, including Chris Evans, not that one, have sent me the article from The Guardian, which is saying, is it adultery if you cheat with an AI companion? Which, you know, I don't think that, I hope not, or I'm in a lot of trouble. Because I often just masturbate over thin air, which is all that is. To be honest, everyone who sent it to me, I'm much more interested in the story that's right beneath it that no one ever comments on, which says, we made horse semen into little shakers. And that is, which I think is also possibly an emergency question I've done. But we will find out whether it's... We'll probably have a discussion about whether it's cheating to have sex with AI. I mean, it's just like the AI will create a saucy conversation with you, all right? Isn't it? That, you've got to be allowed to do that in a relationship, haven't you, madam? Spice up. Don't you think? Oh, yeah. What do you think? Yeah. I mean, he definitely thinks so. It's literally having sex with nothing. You can't... If they stop you having sex with nothing, what can you... What's left for you? I'm having sex with nothing now. Anyway, let's crack on because we have a fabulous guest. I can't believe it's only his second ever appearance on this show, and nor can he. He's furiously angry for being so lax. He's best known, of course, as Mickey Moran in Doctors. That's why we're all here tonight. Will you please welcome the incredible Ed Byrne, ladies and gentlemen? It's Mickey Moran, a.k.a. Mickey Moran from Doctors. Mickey Moran.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed you do. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm you know, I'm delighted you were in Doctors. I missed that episode.
I haven't seen it.
Okay.
It's one of those things. There's a few things I've been in that I've not seen, and
really?
that is absolutely one of them, yeah.
You've done
I played a wheeler dealer.
Oh, wheeler dealer.
Who was trying to sell a load of blow-up dolls.
Oh, really?
Inflatable men, I think
right.
they were.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That was the wrong audience you were going for there. You guys, well, maybe not.
All I remember is that it was very much tangentially involved with the plot of the episode.
Okay.
That's the one thing I remember. Like, I only spoke to any of the other members of the cast at the very end. I think
okay.
it was like my granny was being seen by one of the doctors,
oh, right.
and somehow that's why they crowbarred in this weird Only Fools and Horses storyline about. about a trader, yeah. Anyway.
You do quite a lot of acting jobs, though, on and
I
off.
Do bits and pieces. I do more acting jobs than I do episodes of your fucking podcast. Second time this is. The first time I was on, the only other time, Sarah Pascoe was on as well. I think it was her first time.
Okay.
How many times has Sarah Pascoe been on now?
She's only on it like...
Fuck off. She's on it at least four times. Because every time she's on it again, because I follow you on Twitter, like, you know, and every time she's on it again, I go, oh. I see Sarah's on again. Oh, well, people do get asked back, do they? Right, okay. That's nice. Oh, she's on again. That's three times and I still haven't been asked back. I mean, I think she's very funny.
She is.
But is she four times funnier than me? Is she four times funnier than me? I mean, now I've been on a second time. Still, is she twice as funny as me?
But some people are so funny, you have to space out their appearances.
Oh,
otherwise, it spoils it for that.
Now
it's like when there's a very popular TV show, they move it around in the schedules to give the other shows a chance.
Yes,
when that happens.
They will do that. I've been involved in those shows, yes.
Where
they're so popular. They go, we need to give this a cult following. So what we'll do is we'll not advertise it, we'll not market it, and we will sneak it out at different times in the schedule every week.
Very good.
Series 2 of Dara and Ed's Big Adventure, for instance.
So, there's been many times, but I know you're a big fan of quizzes, and you've done quite a few on the TV, as am I, and I started tweeting a lot about Tenable, and you very excitedly got in touch with me and said, if you're ever on a celebrity team of Tenable, you want to be
on team. I will do it.
Sadly, I've not been able to make that happen yet. I don't know if they've done a celebrity version of Tenable.
I don't know that they have either. No.
I find Tenable...
is a weird one.
It's a little... I think it's a difficult quiz.
Have you ever watched it and just marveled at how stupid the people are who are on it, though? Have you ever gone, are you really, really... Name something, a brass instrument.
Yeah.
And they've gone, piano? No, that's not a brass.
I think the problem is it's actually a pretty hard quiz.
It is a hard quiz.
I don't think they don't necessarily bring on the best quizzes.
No.
If you hit the right subject for you, then you're okay.
Yeah.
And there's some way you can, I prepare, just learn all of Shakespeare's plays. Learn all the Monopoly board. The Monopoly board comes up all the time.
Yeah.
Just learn the Monopoly board.
I'm going to be absolutely 100% honest with you. I am doing The Weakest Link is the next one I'm lined up to do.
Okay.
And last night, having been out, having gigged, and then I got home, I went at the iPlayer and I put on various celebrity Weakest Links. And I just sat full of whiskey and beer. And I even like just forward wound through the fucking who's voting for who shit. It was just the questions. I just sat there like it was boot camp and just answered the Weakest Link questions. He's gone, Bismarck, churches, Berlin. Oh, come on, get in.
I hope you get voted off in the first round.
Oh, mate, I'm going to do it. Do you know what's going to happen? It's going to be like a really fucking easy question, but it'll be something like Love Island or Coronation or just something that everybody knows that I just don't know.
Yeah.
And it'll be some really easy something about Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, nah. and I'll get voted off.
Yeah. I'm sure you're going to do well. I'm sure. The problem with it, if you do too well, they'll vote you off for being too good. So try and be.
I don't think that happens on the charity ones. And if it does, you're allowed to be really arsy about that. If, to get voted off, when it's for charity, to get voted off because you might win. That is a dick move.
But then you might be thinking about your own charity. Your charity will win, but my charity won't win. No. So I have to think about my charity.
It's all about who's going to get the most money for whatever charity. Surely.
No. Maybe.
No, is my sense of fair play just too strong?
Yeah, I think people will cheat to win. My problem with Tenable is that it's the only show I know that has two different hosts. So Warwick Davis does it, and then Sally Lindsay took over for a bit. And I want to know what the story is there.
I think that has happened before. Yeah. I think other shows have
not
changed their hosts.
Not mid-series, though.
Have you heard of Pointless? Richard Osman stopped doing Pointless, and now they've got quite a lot of different people.
Yeah, but
have you seen Have I Got News For You?
He did it for you. It's very unusual in the first series.
Yeah, early on. Yeah. Well, no, but Tenable's been around for a while. Yeah, I guess Warwick Davis was because he would have been off doing Willow. I think that's probably was.
Probably that
TV series that is already being pulled from Disney Plus.
Oh.
No shade, Warwick, but.
They had to make a studio for him that was the right height for him and then make another studio for Sally Lindsay. Though that's the... They had to change
it. It's a chair.
Anyway, the ones I haven't done that you've done. You've done Mr. and Mrs., is that
right? Yeah, now Mr. and Mrs. was a bit... I feel it was a bit unfair because I was on with... Angela...
You would hopefully on with your wife.
I was on with my wife.
Okay, good. Yeah.
But one of the other couples was... Oh, I can't remember her surname. Her name is Angela.
Griffin?
Yes, there you go. That was beautiful. Angela
it's
Griffin.
It's either her or Lansbury.
So here's the thing. Her and her husband had been on it already. Okay. They'd been on it before.
Okay.
With one of the Jacksons, maybe Tito.
Yeah.
And then subsequent to the recording, before the broadcast, Michael Jackson died.
Okay.
And they just thought it was too weird because there was a bit of chat with the guy, whichever member of the Jackson 5 it was, about his brother and that, without any mention of the fact that his brother was now dead.
Right.
So they felt that the entire show had to be trashed and re-recorded.
Yeah.
So... Well, not even re-record. They just binned it.
Yeah.
So Angela and her husband came back, having already done it once.
Practice run.
And I just think that was just not fair.
It presumably was for charity they went, so you didn't complain.
It was for charity, but still.
You're just glad whoever had made the most money won, right?
There's a bit where we lost it was there's a bit where you just hold up a panel. You just hold up a paddle left or right. Depending on whether the answer applies to you or your partner.
Okay.
And it really, if you were of a mind, and I'm not accusing Angela of cheating, but if you were of a mind and you knew that was at work, you could just decide with your other half, we're just going to go left, right, 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 left, and that'll be it, regardless of what the questions were. You could. I'm just saying, if you'd been on the show before and you knew how it worked, there is a way that you can game the system. And they... fucking destroyed on that round. That round, the one round where you could absolutely game the system was the round where they did very, very suspiciously well. But I'm not accusing her of anything.
Okay.
I'm really not. I was hoping for more of a laugh there because now the absolute lack of a laugh really makes me look like more of an arsehole. That's like...
You're just telling me backstage how you got in trouble last time for making an accusation about a TV show and I think... You might just have done it again. So, Family Fortunes. You won Family Fortunes.
We did. We won Family Fortunes. My sister did all the heavy lifting on that one.
Okay.
In that thing at the end where, I mean, I think you have to get like 200 points to get the full on jackpot.
Yeah.
And she'd already got like 160 points.
That could be hard, though. That's
she got four of the five top answers before I even got out there.
That's pretty good.
Which really ruined my opportunity to look like a hero.
You could have still got the.
I got the other one.
Okay.
I did get the fifth one.
You still got all five. You just have to go again. So you still had a chance to be a hero, but you let it down. Right. These are the other things that I'm surprised about with you.
Yeah.
Well, not surprised.
Right.
I don't know if this was just in lockdown, but you've sort of got into carpentry, and I understand you've built your own gazebo.
I did build a gazebo. How did you know that?
I know everything about you. I've got to find stuff out.
Where has that surfaced? I don't recall.
I dive in deep, and I find out everything.
Have you been listening to other podcasts?
I haven't listened to another podcast. I got that from an interview. It might have been with like a local newspaper somewhere.
Must have been, yeah. I did. I built the gazebo. I also dug out a sunken patio.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you because you're outdoorsy.
I do a bit of that.
I know you like climbing hills, mountains, yeah. And Munros.
The gardening thing, the hard landscaping all came about. Myself and my wife basically just decided to divide and conquer. I do usually like to do a bit of cooking.
Yeah.
But when we were locked down and we just went, right, she just said, you fuck off outside. You go in the garden. There's stuff there needs doing and there's stuff there that doesn't need doing, but I'm sure you can find something. And she did all of the cooking, all of it.
Okay.
Like I didn't, while we were locked down, I barely made a slice of toast.
Okay. That's
and it right. just became a thing and it just became her domain and the garden became, and she used to be into the gardening. She used to be into, you know, growing veg and stuff like that. And she didn't go near it. And it just became, in order to keep ourselves sane, we just decided, it was like, have you seen the film The War of the Roses?
Yes.
The bit where they actually mark out. It's like, this seems rational to you. I got more square footage. Anyway, yeah, it was like that. We just decided we're stuck. We can't leave this house. So here's your domain and here's my domain.
Okay, and did that work out for you? I mean, presumably you were
still doing it. We're still doing it.
You do live in the shed.
We still lie. We're at opposite ends of the house, and we find that works a lot better. And we communicate via the children and sometimes the cat.
Well, that's, you know, Tom Baker used to live in either a different house or the different ends of the house with his wife, I think. So, you know, maybe it's a good idea. Maybe that's a good way to...
We do a bit, to be fair, particularly when it's hot. And my wife does snore, I have to admit. Okay. And depending on what time we've got to get up in the morning, I will go and sleep in the guest bedroom. Okay. We do find that works quite well.
Good.
Slightly too well. We do love each other, absolutely. But we also enjoy our sleep.
I think that's a good idea. I'm the snorer in our family, although my wife does snore as well, but I'm not allowed to say that. But I think I definitely snore louder but the kids sometimes complain if I'm in the next room to them. So I sometimes go, we've got an attic upstairs, so I sometimes go in the attic.
No, my wife, it sounds like a monster.
Okay.
And she was. I used to do a routine about it because she said to me once, "Do I not sound like a kitten purring?" No. If you want to go with a feline analogy, you sound like a cat drowning in porridge.
So look, well, I'm glad that the gazebos. I understand you didn't quite get the roof right so that it leaks a little bit. Is that right?
I tell you what I did. I put a thing in it so that we could put a fire pit in. Fire pit, so I put like a chimney thing on it.
Yeah.
So that smoke can go out of it.
Okay.
But it means that it's not ideal if it's absolutely pissing down.
Right, okay.
Rain will get in. But if it's absolutely pissing down, who's going to go and sit in their fucking gazebo when it's absolutely pissing it down?
That's true.
You will. I mean, and I did build it partly because we were in and out of lockdown, and then there was the rules of you could have people over, but they had to be in your garden.
Yeah.
So it was kind of for that.
Yeah.
You know.
It sounds very it sounds very grown up. I could not make a gazebo. I couldn't do anything.
Well, you can come and look at mine, and you can go, oh, you can't make a gazebo either. It will not last the test of time. That's for certain. Sure.
All right, I've got a new emergency question based on looking up you, and I'm going to see if you can work out why you can answer this question. Have you ever saved...
Is the weirdest preamble to a question anyone has ever done.
I found...
That again.
I just wonder whether you'll get the same answers right. I've got to this question, because I think you can answer this question. Have you ever saved anyone's life?
Oh, gosh. I don't think I ever saved somebody's life, but I certainly assisted somebody.
Okay, it might be the same one.
On the hills.
Okay, that's one of this. So there's two. I've got two. That's one of them. I think you've saved two lives.
I can't remember the other one.
So someone collapsed on the hill and you helped them.
They hadn't
out.
Collapsed. It turned out afterwards he'd torn all the ligaments in his knee. Somehow he was carrying quite a heavy pack, and he crocked his knee. So myself and a woman called Phoebe, who's an outdoor writer, me and her were out doing a thing, an article for The Great Outdoorsman, and we met this guy, and he had done his knee. His name was Josh Bratchley, and that's important.
Okay.
And so I took his pack from him.
Okay.
And it was really, and we walked him to safety, and I lent him my walking poles because he didn't have any walking poles. He had fucking everything else. His pack felt like he was taking some dark matter for a stroll. Like he had a bag of coal to burn in the fucking fireplace at the bothy and everything, you know. And like, you know, full, not even dehydrated food, like full fucking four-course dinner he was planning on eating. But he didn't have any walking poles. Anyway, we walked him to safety. And the joke you used to do about it was like that. I tweeted about it, and then it got picked up by the newspapers, and it became like, "Oh, comedian hero of the day saves man." You know, apart from the Daily Mail that said EU migrant steals backpack from stricken hiker. And, but he,
yeah,
Josh Bratchley is now Josh Bratchley. I think he's MBE,
okay,
perhaps OBE, because he then went on to be one of the cave diving team saved the football team in Thailand.
If you hadn't saved him, he died up there.
Yeah.
After he'd eaten all the food in his pack.
What happened. Exactly.
Wow.
Where's my fucking OBE?
Yeah. It's true. Yeah. You're amazing. You saved loads of lives there. That's just one. You saved one life.
In theory, yes.
That's good. The other time you saved a life was to do with diarrhea.
Oh God! That was with the power of my comedy.
Yeah, exactly.
I had a routine about the fact that I had chronic diarrhea for a few weeks, and I went to the doctor, and the routine was really about awkwardness around attractive young women. It was really about what about the fact that I hate myself that I, having become a middle-aged man, I shouldn't care, but I do care what attractive young women think of me, and I shouldn't, but I do. And I remember being in the GP's office, and they went, "We have some students who'd like to listen in. Is that all right with you?" And I went, "Fine." And of course, one of them was gorgeous, and it was just made. And I could tell because you know yourself, you know when someone's recognized you.
Yeah,
totally fucking clocked me, and then suddenly talking about my fucking chewed orange of an arsehole. And just wanging on about my diarrhea. And then there was a thing about blood. And is there blood in the stool? And basically, there was no blood in the stool because there were no stools. Because it was basically like if you put oxtail soup in a soda stream was what was happening. But I said to the doctor or the medical student, "Yes, there's blood, but it's nothing to worry about," was the thing. Because there's a difference between blood actually being... This is the point I made as part of the routine. There's a difference between blood actually in your stool. If you actually have blood in your stool, that's a sign there's something seriously wrong and you need to go yourself get yourself checked out. But if it's just a case of your arse is in tatters because you've been fucking spraying out of it 24 hours a day for 2 weeks, that's not so much to worry about.
Yep.
And the kind of joke was that I knew this much, but the fact that I said to the doctor, you know, "Yeah, there's blood, but it's okay, it's nothing to worry about." So, like, I knew more than he did, and I didn't fucking judge of that. So that was kind of what... But having said that thing of if there's blood actually in your stool, there was a woman in the audience in... I think it was in Carlisle or somewhere.
Yeah, probably.
And she had been experiencing that.
Yeah.
And then when I said that on stage, she went, "Okay, maybe I better get myself looked at." And she did, and she had colon cancer.
Right.
And because they caught it early enough. And then she went on to become an advocate for...
Did she save some children in the cave?
Yeah.
she went on
to save children. She went on to work for Elon Musk designing tiny little submarines. So she was actually the other team.
I mean, it says quite something about a person that they'll have blood in their stools and they'll be having diarrhea and not go to doctors until a comedian does a joke about it.
It's going to be like, "I'm sure." Well, people do. People do kind of go, "I'm sure that's fine." And I know I'm being sexist, but men tend to do it more. Men have a tendency to more think, "I'm sure it's nothing," than women. Women, I think, have a tendency to be more kind of, but actually not in this case.
No.
You know, and then it just took me just nudging her and going, so maybe at the end of every show I should just go, "And if anybody has been affected by any of the issues raised tonight, if anybody here, by the way, goes and gets their arses checked out tomorrow, do let us know how it worked out."
It's beautiful to think this conversation, this podcast could save But what if we save someone who goes on to kill a load of children in a cave?
That still hasn't happened. It hasn't. I love that. It has to be in a cave. Tim's really balanced it out.
You don't know, do you? You don't know. Is it worth saving the person until you know what they're going to do with the rest of their life that you've given them? You should make them sign something as you go. I'm going to help you down from this mountain, but only if you promise to devote the rest of your life to good. Okay, Mr. Byrne, I'll do it. What do you think about the question? I don't know if you heard beforehand. I know you've got feelings about AI.
Did I just do another interview after an AI and I have to give an answer?
You did an interview in which you said you don't think AI will ever replace you.
No, I'm not worried about that at all.
Okay, I don't think I'm going to make you do it because it's so awful. But I don't think it's worth.
Are you
going to
make me read out an AI script?
But I did.
Don't tell me. Don't tell me you did a prompt to get an AI to write stand up in the style of Ed Byrne.
I did. Let me just check this right. And that I did.
I just said myself in the third person. I was just imagining what he was writing. That's all.
I think it might be funny if I do it, then you do it.
Okay.
Legion. Oh, it's going
That is some racist shit. That is some racist shit right there. Would you do it like that if I was Mo Gilligan? Would you?
I'd give it a go. How are you all doing tonight? It's great to be here, I must say. Like, they've written it.
That's not written in the style of. That's pure theft. I always say that.
This is how you start your act. You know, I love doing stand-up comedy. It's the only job where people willingly pay you to stand on stage and mock their lives. It's like therapy, but with an audience and a two-drink minimum.
Two drink minimum. What, am I American?
I know. Right? Well, there's another way it goes into American. There's a joke where it says, it's really bad. I mean, I'd be offended. If I was you, I'd be offended that AI thinks this.
He's going to say it now. I'm going to use that.
Don't get me started on social media. It's like a never ending high school reunion. We used to think the world was big, but now we know exactly what everyone we've ever met is eating for breakfast. It's ridiculous. Do use that. It's good to go. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Especially if it doesn't get it. It's ridiculous. I don't need to see your perfectly plated avocado toast, Janet. I just want to know if you still owe me $20.
Bucks?
Yeah.
Right. I think that's what I'm more offended by. It's absolutely just gone. Ed Byrne, is he a comedian? I'll just call up the fucking comedian thing that we've got. That's it.
So I think you're right. The AI will not yet replace
certainly
comedians.
Well, if it does replace me, it will replace me with a very mediocre American comedian.
But do you consider it? If
I did a joke about AI the other night that didn't. I thought it was very funny. Do you do corporates at all?
I used to. I haven't done one for a while, but I've used to.
I did one for a very specific industry. It was people who work in the archiving and the provision of archive footage. So okay. They do it in storing, retrieving. And using for documentaries or the
burp there. It's good. You nearly got away with it.
Oh my God, he's very emotional when he talks about archive footage. Did you hear the tremble in his voice? They provide archive footage and they store it and they retrieve it and they also do a bit of retouching of it. They do like upscaling to 4K, all that kind of shit. This is an entire industry is built around this whole thing of storing and I did it. They had an awards show and I hosted it and so I was trying to do jokes about that. Subject, and one of the jokes I did that I thought was quite funny was, do you know what's great about you guys is that your job cannot be replaced by AI. You know, they'll try, and yeah, AI can help. You know, there's programs that'll maybe help you clean up and get scratches out of an old film or help you upscale to 4K, but it takes actual human beings to watch footage and be able to identify where all the traffic lights are. That's funny, right? They didn't think it was funny at all. It got fucking nothing. And then I said, you think the job doesn't change, but it does, you know. You think it's all about just retrieval and tagging things and knowing what you know. But then, you know, 10 years ago, the whole thing changed and the new skill came out of having to paint and edit out all the sex offenders. You know, I thought it was great way. Not funny at all.
No. They don't like it up them, that's the thing of those guys.
That would appear. Anyway. Like,
do you think it's cheating to have sex with an AI chatbot? I think it's what the idea is, isn't it? So you can do what I did with... I used it to create an Ed Byrne routine, but you could go, hey, AI, you want to suck my willy, please? And then see what it says.
No, would not be cheating at all, because your willy wouldn't get sucked, would it?
It wouldn't.
There'd be no sucking would happen on the willy, would it? And therefore, no crime has committed.
About 77% of women would consider that cheating, according to this poll.
Getting an AI to talk dirty to you.
Yeah.
77% of women really need to fucking work with themselves, because that is nonsense.
I think
if the worst thing that happens in your relationship is you find out that your husband or your partner is talking dirty, has deliberately chosen to talk dirty to a person who does not exist.
Yeah.
Hasn't paid a prostitute, hasn't had an affair, literally is talking to someone who does not exist, and to do nothing more than talk dirty.
Yeah.
How the fuck? That's Mr. Muscle. That's doing the jobs you hate. Like, how is that? How could that be a problem?
Well, I agree with you, but I don't think anything should be counted as cheating. That's I don't think having sex with human beings.
I could say with absolute confidence, I don't think my wife would think that was cheating either.
Okay. I think even my wife, who won't let me have sex with a robot, would. Yeah.
This is cool. A robot I made. No, because I mean, you know, I've seen, you know, sci-fi, you know, was it Humans? Was that the name of it?
That's where the debate originated between
Yeah, but that's fair enough. But he actually has sex with a physical thing.
Not a person. No, it's a robot, so you should be allowed to do it. Yes. It looks like Gemma Chan. Doesn't mean it is Gemma Chan. It just looks like Gemma Chan.
It does.
It is Gemma Chan.
Isn't she Jack Whitehall's girlfriend?
She was. She was.
Not anymore. Then I can wire in there. Yeah. So the implication there was the only thing stopping me was my loyalty to Jack Whitehall. It's not my marriage. That was not the issue. It's a man I've met 5 times. No, but the point is, you know, there was a character there, wasn't there, who also looked after their kids. This was a character that they trusted to look after their kids.
Not personally.
And he whatever, disabled the protocols on it in order to bang it. So there was an argument there, absolutely.
It was a little bit seedy. But
he actually fucked something.
Yeah.
But you're talking about a chat, but you're talking about text.
What about if... while you're doing the AI, you've got the Henry Hoover on your car.
Well, see, now that's also curious because it depends. Because some women are all right, for instance, if their other half is with, you know, somebody of the same sex. That can be a rule. So it'd be all right if it was a Henry Hoover. But if it had been a Hetty Hoover, my wife might have gotten annoyed by that, you know.
It's a minefield. We have to be careful. So we do have to watch out. But I think that one's... It does seem weird that part... Most men, I think, would consider it cheating as well. But maybe I've misunderstood what having sex with AI is. But I don't think I have.
It doesn't involve having sex. You're talking about, like, phone sex, chat. Yeah. You're talking literally a text-based thing.
I guess it's possible to have... Because what you can do is have someone do your training video for you, can't you? You can just... type it in and then there'll be a video and someone will do the training video, but it's not a real person.
Right,
so
maybe a deep fake, you mean.
Maybe it's that when you type the thing in, a person or whatever you want will appear and do the things, but it's not a real person. It's still not a real person.
I think it's a sign of a fairly unhealthy relationship. You're doing it.
Yeah.
But again, I would say it's fairly... I would consider that guilt-free.
Yeah.
Because, again, literally no one is involved. It's... Yes. Very complicated, and I would say quite sad masturbation. Yeah. Like, because when you think about it, if you're jacking off to porn, other people actually were involved in making that. They're real people there. It's a recording of them, but that's more unfaithful because you're actually looking at actual human beings.
Yeah.
So there's more of an involvement of another person in doing that than there is...
I guess,
an artificial construct.
I guess the people who don't like the artificial construct would probably not like the pornography as well, though.
Yeah, but I would still say which is worse, though. I'm going which is worse. I'm saying neither is particularly bad.
I agree. Let's go to the dressing room and try it out together. It'll be free in what we're doing.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Let's talk about your... Well, this is an Edinburgh Fringe podcast, of course. I should have mentioned that at the top. This will be going out during the Edinburgh Fringe. This is me at the Edinburgh Fringe, not going to the Edinburgh Fringe, but still being at the Edinburgh Fringe. I'm very clever. So I'm like artificially at the Edinburgh Fringe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We'll talk about your Edinburgh show. You're doing a new stand-up show that you're also going to be touring.
Yeah.
Called Tragedy Plus Time.
Tragedy Plus Time, yeah.
Which is... It comes from a very serious place.
It is a bit, yeah. And I think that the hardest thing about the show has not been writing it has been difficult, and performing it so far has had its difficulties. But the hardest thing has been talking about it in an upbeat way, because the show centers around the death of my little brother died last year.
Yes.
And it's obviously that's really quite sad. But he would want me to talk about it. I know he would. And the thing is, I'm actually already quite a hack, because I saw 3 different shows at the Edinburgh Fringe last year about this.
Yeah.
And when I say about this, I don't mean about their little brothers dying. I saw 3 shows about my little brother dying, because he was a comedy writer and he was a comedy director. What his thing, his name was Paul Byrne, his thing was he would take people who had like 45 minutes of jokes, and he would help them turn that into a one-person Edinburgh Fringe show. It was quite a niche role in comedy, but he was really good at it, and he had a bunch of clients and a bunch of people who you'd know, Roisin Connolly, Larry Dean, Sindhu V, you know, people like who he worked with and helped, you know, just improve their shows. So he was working on various people's shows at the time of his death. He died in February, and so there was a bunch of people then in that August whose shows I went to see, who started off talking about... So this show didn't turn out how I wanted. I was working on it with my director, Paul, who's also my friend. And they do that. And Paul, he's very fun. And they would talk about Paul. And then like the 45-minute mark would go, anyway, Paul died. I totally saw it coming, right? They did not. They didn't fool me. But yeah, so there was a bunch of shows about it last year. So, but I've just, and I think people can forgive me, I've taken slightly longer to write mine.
Yes.
But yeah, he absolutely would want, you know, as I say to the audience at the start of the show, he would want me to talk about this. So if you don't laugh, you're the ones disrespecting the dead. but then talking about it, it's one thing about here, but I was on Saturday Kitchen the other day talking about it. Right. And that's a bubbly show.
Yeah.
And it's like, yes, what's the show about? Well, and I'm like, well, on the upside, it's not about me kids. Right? I've done a lot of shows now about parenting, and it really pisses people off. But this one is not about me kids. It's about my dead brother, you know. And so we just got into a discussion. The sort of conceit of the show is it's about the darkest joke I ever told, which I won't reveal here. It comes at the end of the show, and it's about something I said to my mother afterwards.
Okay.
But the whole thing is about how humor can get you through the worst thing. And it's that thing. It was supposed to be Mark Twain. Since I named the show Tragedy Plus Time. I've been doing a bit more reading about it, and apparently it wasn't Mark Twain. It's been attributed to Mark Twain that he defined humor as tragedy plus time. So the idea is that how big a tragedy and how much time before it's funny.
Yes.
And it is weird how, like, the darkest stuff can still... Like, the stuff... Like, the worst moment of my life was watching my little brother die, because we went for the switch off, for the unplugging of the life support, and I made the mistake of playing some music on my phone of a band I knew he liked, but a band I'd never heard this album. And it was a band called Sebado. And the album was Sebado 3. And it was a fucking... There is no ideal soundtrack to watch your little brother's life ebb out of his body. But if there is, it's not fucking this, right? It was... It made a bad situation worse. And it is one of those things where I look back on it. It was like a sitcom. It was like a... Like, it was, I mean, we're talking proper, like, ah, yeah, ah! There's a point at the end of the album where the guy is just yelling, blood on the walls! Blood on the walls! It's fucking horrible. It's not like just like heavy metal. It's really discordant, dark shit. To the point where, and this is completely true, when the album finished, my brother is still dying, and myself and my mother are still going through this nightmare.
Yeah.
But when that album finished, I turned to my mother and said, well, thank fuck that's over. Like that. And that is true. And it is undeniably funny that happened. It's horrible, it's sad, it's dark, but it is undeniably funny that took place. So the kind of the whole show, that's the tone of it right there.
Yeah, but that's, well, I mean, as comedians, obviously, we always, you know, we know that the kind of, not exactly the juiciest, not always the funniest stuff, but that in those bad things that happen to us and those dark things that happen to us, there is always a joke in there.
Yeah.
But also that is exactly that processing something as terrible as that and as difficult to understand, you know, as difficult to comprehend as that, comedy is a great way of doing it, and for both for you and for presumably anyone in the audience who's experiencing something similar.
And it
has
was for him when he was going through it. Like he knew he needed a liver transplant.
Yeah,
and he even said to me in the November he was in hospital and we were talking about it, and he said what's really heavy, and this is in the show, is the fact that, you know, it's what's actually really heavy is not the fact that I might die if I don't get a new liver. It's the fact that in order for me to live, I know that someone else has to die. And that's a very difficult thing to deal with, knowing that for me to live, someone else has to die. But then he went, but you know what? Two people probably died to make me iPhone. So... so that's... You know, so when somebody makes a joke like that, you know, that's the, you know, that I feel like it gives me license to say what I've been saying.
Of course.
And I tell that one to the audience quite early doors, to sort of give them license to laugh, basically.
Yeah. And, you know, these things, as horrible as it is, these things do throw up funny stuff and funnier stuff, because, you know, the juxtaposition of the worst possible thing happening and something ridiculous happening really sharpens it. You know, I've had some of the biggest laughs that I've ever had at funerals, you know, when you shouldn't be laughing, or when just someone's singing badly at a funeral.
Yeah. Oh, God. I mean, this isn't even in the show, but Paul's funeral... you know Tim Fitzhyam?
Yes.
You know, we came on to... We played The Last Post.
Right.
Which he used to do at the end of every... Andrew Maxwell's Full Mooners used to be a thing that was on at the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
And he used to always play The Last Post. And Paul was like a... You know, sort of... worked on that show with them. So he went... But he had the wrong mouthpiece in. And he was overcome with emotion. So it was awful. It was just like... and yeah, it was fucking terrible. But hugely fitting.
Yeah.
And we're all just laughing at how badly he was playing The Last Post.
Yeah.
And then, and this is also true, and this is in the show, in accordance with Paul's wishes, at the crematorium, the celebrant then pressed the button and said, and now we commit his body to the flames in the manner in which he requested. And he rolled into the flames of the crematorium to Disco Inferno by the chant. That's true. Burn, baby, burn, Disco Inferno. Our surname is Burn. He's the youngest in the family. It works on so many levels.
But you know that, and you know as well, and I know that we'd want to have the same thing. We'd want people. We'd really want people laughing at our funerals and crying a bit.
We want them crying a bit, but we also want them laughing. Yeah,
but and you know, and you would if you're in that situation, and you can comprehend what's happening. You'd want to think people were, you know, you'd want to go out to not necessarily music with blood on the walls, but you'd want to go out to knowing people were. Were kind of there was some laughter in that room as well as some tears in that room as well.
Yeah, and there was, you know, there was a lot of very funny stuff at that funeral. Yeah.
It, you know, it's a big thing. I mean, obviously the show I'm working on is about my own cancer, which luckily turned out to be.
I have my ball back. Yeah,
yeah, and it's good to
you don't die at the end of that. Though,
No spoilers. I want to keep people guessing, but you know, there's my friend Tony. Just died just before lockdown from cancer, but he was very funny about it as well. So I quote some of his.
And you talk about him in the show.
Yeah, a little bit talk about him in the show, but you know, because it really brought home. He's a year older than me, and you know, now I'm older than he was. Those things are sort of weird. You know. So I know that he would love to be remembered in the show, and I know that he'd love for his jokes to be told and for people still to be laughing at them. But it is, you know, I found writing that book, I mean, quite difficult, but also very cathartic in just dealing with the situation. So for you as well, presumably, working through this show is helping you. Though it must be, it's a lot more tragic than what I went through and a lot more difficult to deal with.
Well, it's weird because when he died, I was on tour. And obviously, when it looked like it was the end, I cancelled a load of gigs, but then after he died, like I went back on the road, and that first gig back on the road was the best I felt in like weeks, because it was the one time I didn't think about it, and it's also you probably feel this, you know, as a comic, the time you spend on stage, it's like that's the only 90 minutes of your day where you feel like you know what you're doing. You know, everything else is out of control and you've no idea. Whereas that one time where you're up there, you know exactly how things work. It was the one time I didn't think about it, and it was the best I felt was while I was on stage, because I could put it all out of my mind. And now that over a year has passed, I kind of like that, talking about him now that there's been some distance, you know, it feels like I'm making an appointment at the end of every day to talk to other people about him, you know. It's weird, and it's a completely new thing for me. I have never done a serious, in inverted commas, show before.
Sure.
I've never done a show where there's, you know, where people then, where the feedback's been, we laughed, we cried, we laughed again. It's usually just we smiled through most of it. All right, we laughed at a couple of bits, but we'd seen them before.
I do love that about comedy, and I love it about comedians. I do, you know, I do love comedians. Your brother was a great guy. I met him a few times, and you know, it was, again, it's one of those we were talking backstage about a couple of other people who've passed recently, but your brother was one of those people that everyone knew and everyone, you know, had a lot of time for, and he was, you know, and I know how upset, I've talked to a couple of the comedians, I think even on here, and I know how upset the people who worked with him were about it all. So it's, you know, it's such a positive thing, I think, in every regard. I guess as long as at the end of the night you're not going back to your hotel and going and all hitting you again, I suppose. But I think that there's no way, when something like this happens, there's no getting over it. You know, it's not like, oh, I'm fine now. Someone I loved dead and I've got over it. That never really happens, right? So it's a really positive thing.
It's the best I can do with what I've got. It is the glass of lemonade I am serving everyone for the lemons that have been forced upon me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, but that's what I love that about comedians. I love that comedians. I mean, I don't think in this case, when I lost a ball, a lot of comedians were quite jealous of the fact that I had a great subject.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Routine.
I think people would necessarily feel the same jealousy to you.
No.
But I hope not.
But that is incredible. Because this doesn't compare to losing a ball. But like, you know, I had a hernia operation. And as soon as I thought I had a hernia and went to the doctor, and they went, yeah, that's a hernia, I thought, I've definitely got to be 10 minutes in this. You know, it doesn't matter how bad your misfortune is. And it did. Everything bad that happened, and particularly the bad things that happened to you, you do end up turning into comedy.
You do. Is there any way for people who aren't comedians to access that? I suppose there is. I mean, I suppose it's about being positive about, you know, I've really found, you know, the most of my experience was incredibly positive because it made me appreciate what I had. It made me not want to die. It made me want to see my kids grow up. You know, made me realise what my priorities were in life. So I suppose everyone can have that kind of revelation, and everyone can see the positive side of something unpleasant happening, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is a weird, you know, comedians are weird. And I think I remember this from the last time you came on this show. I think I hadn't seen you. I've seen you a few times since, but I hadn't seen you for a little while. And when you just, you know, you just get into the
just dressing room, into a groove, don't
and
you?
It's just like we'd pick up from wherever you were 5 years before. And sometimes you don't see a comedian for 10 years, and you're just back into it.
Yeah,
and there is something weird about comedians, and people have said that about going to other countries and meeting comedians that they've never met.
Yeah,
that it just you fall into this.
We have a shorthand. We have an understanding.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I 100% agree with it. That's why I've got really annoyed that I feel like there's more and more now, there seems to be a bit of a polarisation in the comedy world between your, you can't say anything anymore.
Yeah.
And your, there seems to be a woke versus anti-woke civil war starting to break out
in
the world of comedy that distresses me somewhat.
Yeah, I
feel,
guess.
Do you feel the comedy is becoming a little bit tribal now?
And I think it can be, but I suppose all the, you know, I think that in the extreme cases, yeah, if you took the people who are running the very woke gigs and the people who are running the very unwoke gigs, I think, hey, I think someone else made this point quite recently in this podcast, but they're sort of the same thing. a gig where you're not allowed to do any of that material, a gig where you can only do that material. You've sort of putting so much pressure on yourself that you've created the same night.
Yeah.
Just one's horrible and one's too lovely. I think most people can sort
we
of see.
Go, where can I go to do my material about the differences between cats and dogs? Because the wokesters aren't interested and the you can't say anything anymore crowd don't want to fucking know either.
Yeah. I know. But I think most comedy is still somewhere in the middle and most comedians are really in the middle. And I sort of really dislike that idea of a night where you do your most offensive material, not because I don't like offensive material, but just because I think it only works if it's in a night where you're not expecting offensive material or you're not, or that's not what it's about.
Well, my thing about the concept of offensive material, because there are some comedians who have this argument who'll say that you should be able to say whatever you want on stage. Like the stage should be a safe place and no matter whatever you say, no one should be able to get offended by anything a comedian says. And there's a lot of comedians who, you know, who maybe pride themselves on being edgy, who will, you know, espouse that notion that if it's a comedian and it's just a joke, you should be able to say whatever you want and no one should get offended. But I go, well, if that's the case, then what is the difference between Michael McIntyre and Frankie Boyle?
Yeah.
Like, where there's no such thing as edgy. If anyone should be allowed to say whatever they want,
yeah,
then there's no such thing. Then there is no edge.
No.
Because the wraps are off. Yeah. So that laugh you get, where people are like, "Oh, I can't believe you said that," and that kind of thing. And that whole concept of taking a distasteful concept and getting comedy out of it, or pushing an audience's boundaries and that kind of thing, that ceases to exist.
Yeah.
The moment you say, "Well, it shouldn't matter what a comedian says,"
yeah,
you have to accept that it matters what they say in order to be able to get that ooh reaction.
Yeah, exactly. And you have to feel I'm jumping into the unknown with this. Maybe it'll work, and maybe it won't.
Yeah, the concept of risk.
I think that's maybe what they feel you're losing is, oh, I'm. I think John Cleese is sort of, he's saying, you know, if a comedian doesn't feel they can say anything, then there's their artistic freedom is so fettered, but. There's always been things you can't,
oh, totally.
You can't say. So Jesus. You,
I remember, in 97, people who had, you know, would absolutely be storming it, and then they went, "Fuck it, I'll toss in me old Princess Diana material and see if it still works," and fucking walk off to the sound of their own feet.
Yeah.
You know, because that was a hot, but that was, and for years, like after she died, you could not make a joke about that woman, right?
Yeah.
And people who were pissing themselves laughing at jokes about Diana when she was alive, suddenly that's it. And for like 2 years, and I've seen comedians who had routines about Princess Diana And I could see them. They were doing great. I remember seeing a few times at the Glee Club, particularly for some reason. And they're going, "Oh fuck, this is going well." Do you know what? I'm just gonna say, I'm just gonna dust off the old fucking Diana and see if I can bring it back. No. Yeah. And the audience just turn on them. No, we are not fucking having it. Yeah. Because whatever it is, there's always going to be an issue that the audience has just decided is a bit too far, and that's always been the case. It's just the subject matter changes. That's all.
Yeah. But so you've already got that barometer in every gig, and you find out what works and what doesn't. That's the job of the comedian. But I don't think most of those gigs in the middle are. You know, I think someone could come from either of those other gigs and still be able to do their stuff. So I think for most people, it isn't really affecting it. And I think when I meet the guys who are running those gigs that I don't really care for, I sort of get on with them still. I still, you know, you realise they've got a different viewpoint to me about what, you know, I like doing edgy comedy. I like taking risks with comedy. So, but they've got a slightly different idea of how you do that. But I still feel I get on with them, and I still feel I get on with Wokey McWoke.
How is Wokey McWoke anyway?
The blooming snowflake. I mean, you know, as if being woke is a bad thing. But you know, I think I still like those kind. And you know, I think the circuit. You know, you and I were going in the 90s, and I think the circuit in the 90s was much more restricted. It was much more white men doing quite laddie stuff, and there wasn't much variety of opinion or experience, I would say. Yeah, and I think now it's really we've got a beautiful rainbow.
But I still, you would go to say the Comedy Store on a Saturday night, and virtually every comedian get on stage would have a paedophile joke. You know what I mean? And it wasn't considered particularly shocking.
No.
And it was, you know, and in a way that, you know, it might have been in the 80s you wouldn't be able to say it, but then you could in the 90s, you know.
Yeah.
And that was, but you couldn't do anything to say about race, you know. And now I think because we have, I think, more of a more diverse comedy population, as in of people actually doing comedy,
yeah,
things like race can be handled far more openly. Mm-hmm. You can get more interesting material even from white comedians now, particularly when they're on a mixed bill and you know who they're with and stuff like that. I think these kind of topics can be discussed more widely than they could when it was a very monocultural circuit.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I think it's everything's still fair game, I think. So I think it's a bit of an artifact. I think a lot of the things that are dividing society are slightly artificial, you know, artificial talking points that aren't really,
yeah,
that most people, it doesn't really matter to them. Yeah. One side or the other of that argument, and then you make it matter to someone. Like Brexit's a very good example of that. Brexit was something that 30 years ago very few people would have cared about, and they made enough people care about it for it to happen. Not really.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a good analogy, because that implies that whatever people are pretending to care about now is actually going to be a massive thing.
Yeah, that's true. It could. Well, you know, it could be. Well, I think, but the woke, the idea of wokeness is absolutely fucking ridiculous, and you can't, and when the, you know, people can't define it when they actually are forced to define it. And it's only about being, you know, being awake and being aware and being kind to people is what it really is.
Well, it's now that woke has been redefined by anyone who doesn't like any kind of progressiveness. That's, woke was a very specific thing. It meant to be aware of the baked-in inequalities in society, particularly with regard to race.
Yeah.
Particularly with regard to race, but not exclusively. But that was it. The baked-in inequalities of society, being aware of them, that's being woke. And now it's being a vegan. Like that, seriously, now it's you know, crying at fucking weddings is woke now. Anything that anyone doesn't approve of or doesn't think is typically male or enough is now woke. It's like there was a fucking article in the Telegraph about like builders are turning woke because they're talking about history. Like it was utterly ludicrous. Yeah,
I think we'll be all right. Well, look, we've got a little bit of time. You're 3.2% Neanderthal.
Yes, that was one thing I discovered on a show I did.
That's a lot. That's
another television programme that involved Darragh O'Brien. I do my own stuff, you know. it was a Science Club, I think, was the name of the show that he did. He had another one of his failed vehicles. but... Yes, yeah, so you can test. There's genetic markers to tell you how Neanderthal you are.
That's quite a lot, isn't it? 3.2.
3.2 is pretty high. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But is it? Yeah, it is. No, it is. You're absolutely right. But don't worry, I'm not going to start throwing rocks at your head.
Well, you know, maybe. I mean, I've read a beautiful book about Neanderthals that was on the Hullisper Book Club. Thank you. That you should all read by Rebecca Ragg, I want to say. I hope I've got that right. But take it out if I got it wrong, Ben. but it's, you know, but it, but they. There's a, you know, they're not the Neanderthals were not necessarily the way people imagine them. So maybe
as primitive as they thought. Yes. Yeah. Well, no, that was. I think we might have talked about this the last time, and then it actually turned out that we interbred with Neanderthals. The Homo sapiens and Neanderthals did interbreed more in a way that we didn't think. We thought it was just going to be completely separate, but actually we did. We cohabited, and we bumped uglies even.
Good. Do you think it would be cheating to have sex with the Neanderthal?
Yes, because it's an actual...
it's a different species, I mean, I suppose, yeah.
Technically, well, they, you know... But, yeah, but, I mean, it's still... It's cheating if you fuck the cat. Like, that's still... You are still having sex with another living creature.
What if it just licks... You put some Marmite on your cock and it just licks the end
then
of your...
Then that's all right. Yeah.
Okay. That works. I expect... They've got quite a rough tongue, though, so be careful. Okay. Good. Well,
I said that about the cat. Like, I came home to find my wife with the cat. And I'm like, that's cheating if you fuck the cat.
So, look, tell us where your show is on in Edinburgh, first of all.
Oh, I'm at the Music Hall. I think I'm on at around 9:30.
Okay.
I think... Roughly,
that's right. If people can look it up.
Who listens to a podcast and goes, that's all the information I need. I am not going to consult any devices. I'm not going to look that up. That's all I need to know. And I'm just going to walk there now and make sure I get there at the time he said.
Someone, I hope. Yeah. Maybe buy a ticket before you go and just look at the ticket. That's why.
Sometime between 9, the show starts between 9 o'clock and 10 o'clock. I think it's 9:30.
Okay. And then you're on tour for
and
the
And then I'll be on tour. The tour, the dates are, at the moment are booked between now and the end of the year, but there will be more dates then.
Cool.
Up to the summer. Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. And is it nice to be back on the road again?
I've only just finished. Yeah. I mean, my old show, I rang the absolute juice out of the last show I did. The show I did at the Edinburgh Fringe in 2019, I only stopped doing it a few weeks ago. Right. Like, I did a little tour around the Nordic countries, and I went to New Zealand and Australia with it as well. And so I've only just finished doing that. And then I just recorded it at the Soho Theatre in July there. So, because of the truncated nature of that tour, because I had to take 18 months off because of a pandemic.
Oh yeah.
The new show has come slightly hot on the heels. So,
Yeah.
I'm it's not like I'm dying to get back out on the road, because I've been on the road. I was dying to get back out on the road after COVID.
Yeah.
And I've been fairly steadily working since then.
But that's good. That's good.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially if your wife wants you out of the house.
She wants me out of the house.
So that's really out the house. That's out the garden. That's everywhere you go.
Oh, God, when I was in New Zealand, I went to Australia and New Zealand for like 5 weeks, and I phoned her and said, so I'm coming back on Sunday. And she went, I thought I had another week.
It's going well, though, right? The marriage is going. The marriage is going absolutely fine.
We have our rules. She's not allowed to fuck the cat. I am allowed to have an affair with AI constructs.
Okay. It's a beautiful relationship. And the wedding vows must have been terrific.
And now Gemma Chan.
So. Okay, good. Always good. Now you've got the okay from Jack. It's all right. Off you go. Look, it's always a delight, and you can come back whenever you like, Ed. You don't have to
you know
wait.
What? I feel bad because I've just remembered I did do it at the Edinburgh Fringe as well.
Oh, did you? Yeah, so, but that was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago, yeah. But I haven't done it here. This is only my second time here. Okay. So, yeah, I still think I'm allowed to be annoyed all the times I saw that Sarah Pascoe had done it again when I had not.
I will never have her on again until you've done as many times as she has. And I'll count up the laughs from each one and work out. Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up. The incredible Ed Byrne. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Ed Byrne. The music is provided by Scant Regard. Thank you to Pest for doing the music in the past, but, you know, those days are gone, my friends. I am indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. I'm also indebted to Chris Evans, not that one, to Jess at the Leicester Square Theatre. She's the best one here. Everyone else at Leicester Square Theatre as well, and all of the crazy crew who film and record this show. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.